All right, welcome back, everyone. After a long, long hiatus, I think our last show was in the middle of August. You're listening to BME Radio again. It's now, I guess, by the time this broadcasts, it's quite possibly the start of October, and we are restarting with, I guess, the people who can best be called the people's heroes of BME, the sort of reigning Mr. and Miss BME, and heavily modified individuals in their own rights. We're speaking with Jason Sand and his wife, Frances. Jason, thanks for talking to us today.
Thank you, Shannon.
I guess we'll jump right into it. Now, when you first started getting tattooed, facially tattooed, that is, that was, about 2 years ago now?
Just about a year and a half.
Mm-hmm. Now, you seemed... And I don't want this to sound wrong. You seemed sort of a little unstable and a little unsure of both your motivations and the effects you were looking for socially. Has this been sort of an emotional journey as well as an aesthetic one?
It's been just as much of a spiritual and emotional as anything. It's been more of a coming to awareness of who and what I am.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about when you sort of first started crossing that gap of being someone where, you know, where what you were feeling was inside of you to starting to express it, you know, with tattoos on your face. What were you trying to achieve, and what were you really trying to tell the world?
Well, I honestly didn't know what I was trying to achieve, but as to what I was telling the world, I can definitely say is that what I was trying to do is to prove that you could do it either way. I mean, I started, basically I was a straight A student, and I dropped out with straight A's just for the simple fact of avoiding a diploma, just to show that you didn't have to have that piece of paper. And everyone knows that you do have to have that piece of paper, but I've made it just as far as anyone with it than anyone without it. And the facial tattoo was kind of an extra challenge. It was like the next step to see, well, people like this can't work, so what I'm going to do is show that you can. And then to take it even further, I've tried to stay in the white collar industry.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you this later on, but I guess I'll jump right to it. You'd mentioned to me the other day that, you know, the job you'd really like is accountant. I mean, why in the world would you want to be an accountant?
Well, I like working with money. And I'm really... numbers are my passion. I'm just really into mathematics and things like that, and I'm not sure on specifically accounting. I'm going to try to work in the whole financial type business where I can still focus on working on the internet or outside the public's eye and still be really active in the white collar industry.
Mm-hmm. What I mean, there's very few people with facial tattoos are drawn to working in the mainstream. What is it about the mainstream versus, say, you know, finding a job like this, you know, like being an accountant, but in, you know, like being an accountant for bikers, or, you know what I mean? Why work twice as hard, you know, as someone without tattoos to succeed in a non-tattooed person's world?
I guess the self-fulfillment, to know that I can make it twice as good as anyone in the world, even though I'm only getting half as much. It's just the personal gratification, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about, now when you first, first you got the dots tattooed on your forehead, is that right?
I guess the big
step was the, I don't know how you want to describe it, your sort of nose and bridge piece. What is that exactly?
It was just kind of like a symbiote type thing, kind of alien-esque, where it's supposed to represent the sign of Aries, which I try to incorporate into a lot of work, just because that's my sign, and I feel that pretty much I'm the embodiment of flamboyant, yet a little flaky, and really outgoing and taking the world head-on.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, after I had done that piece, when I started working in my other pieces, I started taking on an evolution-type theme, to where it all kind of represents evolution in its own way.
Mm-hmm. It's from an artistic point of view, even your work that would fall into, I guess, what people would call tribal, like the piece on your forearm and hand, is definitely also really crossing over into abstract art, and there are very few people who have, you know, tattoos in that style. Was it difficult to convince tattoo artists to do that type of work?
Actually, I had a hard time at first hunting around, but once I found an artist to do my dots, I got those done, and I went in like to get my hand tattooed not long after, and the response they gave me was at another shop, and they said, well, you're already ruined, so I don't much see the problem with doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, it was more of artists wanting to tattoo my face and hands and things. They saw someone who was into it, really knew what they wanted, someone who had a good job, knew where they were going, and it was just more of a canvas for them to actually get it out there in a place where I can't hide it, regardless.
Mm-hmm. The designs are all yours?
For the majority of, they're all designs that I've came up with and incorporated with the artist,
mm-hmm.
except for the fish on my cheeks that the artist had already previously drawn him up. It was his own design, and then I went through and made some changes to him.
Which are the fish? There's what looks the sort of spiral vines. Is that right?
Yeah, I've got spiral vines. What they started out as just original spirals, and then later on they just felt a little naked. So I've been adding leaves and thorns, mm-hmm. bubbles around them, and extra vines crossing over them.
Well, there seems to have been a real sort of quality transformation as well. Now, the early pictures you sent were a little bit blurry, so it's sort of hard to tell, but it looks like the pieces have been touched up quite a bit and you know, have greatly improved over this year and a half.
Actually, they haven't been touched up much, but the quality of the artists has been changing. As the artists, I had like one artist do three pieces and then another artist do two, and you can see them getting more comfortable with my face and everything after each piece.
Mm-hmm.
And then now our current artist, he's just an amazing artist, and he works real well, and he's our best friend. He was the best man at our wedding, and it was his first facials. We were both, all of our artists, it was all their first facials. And ours just seemed to really, the one we have now was just really in touch with what we wanted, what we needed, and he's had no problems.
Mm-hmm. I guess the other piece that's sort of a bit perplexing, the piece on your upper lip, it's almost like a skull's mouth?
It's, the story behind that is it was supposed to be a tribal representation of seaweed.
Okay.
And it looked good on paper, it really was everything I wanted, and I put it on my face, and it was not at all what I wanted.
To me, it sort of screams out like almost like a Mexican Day of the Dead sort of design.
Yeah, exactly. And the funny thing about it is, it was the one tattoo I always hated. And I mean, I've got a lot of crap on me, but that one just screamed out because it looks exactly like it did on paper, but it wasn't what I was seeing once it was put on my face.
Mm-hmm.
But over time, it's turned into one of the most complimenting tattoos on my face.
Mm-hmm.
It really ties in with the shape of my face and fits really perfectly, and it's picked up a little bit of symbolism for me. It kind of represents just like a single cell organism, and it just reminds me of something that, you know, no matter the confusion behind it, it still has meaning.
Mm-hmm.
What that is, I'm not quite sure yet.
Mm-hmm. I guess we'll move down your body a bit. Your nipples, that was also another early tattoo for you?
Yeah, it was right after my dots.
And those are, I guess, big eyes?
Yeah, they're hieroglyph style eyes, but I drew up the hieroglyphs myself and fitted them to my nipples, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm working into making an actual abstract collage-type face on my chest from, like, shoulders all the way down to waist.
Mm-hmm. Now let's see, your forehead is sort of an exploding scene?
It's supposed to be a representation of the Big Bang.
Mm-hmm. And then your neck sort of juxtaposes that, I guess?
The, what was that?
Your neck sort of juxtaposes that. It's a mushroom cloud, isn't it?
Yeah, it's supposed to be an atomic explosion with Kanji in the middle. And the Kanji represents change, earth, winter, and God. Change,
mm-hmm.
being what we go through, earth being the time and place we are, winter a time of contemplation, and God the level we all seek in our own perspective ways.
Mm-hmm. Now you've hung around tattoo shops enough that you know the sort of the flack that that kanji tattoos seem to get. If you were doing it again, would you get kanji again, or?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's better than having to spell it out in English.
Mm-hmm.
I know what it means, and I can say what it means, and that's all that's really important.
And if the translation is off, it doesn't matter because that's what it means to you.
Right, and I've had it translated already.
Mm-hmm, and it's pretty close.
Yeah, each kanji has multiple meanings anyways.
Mm-hmm.
So, and all of them basically fit exactly what I was looking for, if not a little bit more than what I was looking for. Change, the one I have actually represents spiritual change a little bit, and that really ties into how it all started for me, because I went straight to my neck after having just a few minor tattoos.
Well, I was just gonna say that your face is the one piece that there's a lot on it, and now it's now that you've got you seem to sort of have the bulk of it there. It's starting to become unified and like a completed piece. And I'm wondering whether the rest of your body will follow suit, and whether it will be a single concept or where you want it to go in the long run.
It's going to be a related concept, but probably not the same. Right now I'm planning a back piece with John Clue, and that should hopefully be coming together in December. And we've just been corresponding with him lately, and that's going to be a full plant scene. And that's going to tie in with the organic type theme I'm going with. And the face I'm doing on my chest is to represent the inner self pressing out, hence the implants.
Mm-hmm. I guess we'll take a quick music break right now, and when we come back, we'll talk about some of your heavier mods. You've got some of the biggest chest implants anywhere out there. You've got a meatotomy, and you've got a tongue splitting coming up, and I imagine some other things as well. So we'll be back shortly with Jason Sand. We're back with Jason. Jason, let's get right into your heavier mods. You've had a meatotomy for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
How did you first decide you wanted to do that?
Basically, I had held off on genital piercings for a while because I knew that I wanted something different, something that was going to more work within what I wanted beyond the regular bounds, and I had just. I'd done a lot of reading on BME and specifically the J interview.
Mm-hmm.
And after meeting him on the surgical BBS, which was up at one point, I contacted him, talked to him in person, and found out that basically it felt a lot right for me. I didn't know exactly why. You know, I hadn't done a lot of the urethral play and things in an early age like a lot of other people with sub-incisions and meatotomies have. It just felt like a nice permanent step towards a new type of modification, even though now I know it wasn't as new as a lot of us thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what I did is I just decided to do that before I started piercing, and then from there be able to pick up back where I had started.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I'll just sort of interject that I think, Jay deserves an incredible amount of credit for, the articles that he's written, and I think he's inspired an awful lot of people. myself included. Now, you were saying on our over that break that you were planning on continuing that metotomy into a sub-incision as well.
Right. Basically, we're going to take it about another 3 or 4 inches down.
What makes you decide what point to stop at?
You mean lengthwise? Or
yeah, lengthwise. Lengthwise on the sub-incision.
The ejaculatory muscles.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be able to retain a bit more of a spurt and a bit better chance to keep it all in there.
Okay. Are you planning on having children?
Yeah, that's definitely in our plans. I'm actually the one that's brooding right now. And that's why I've been holding off on some transcrotal type work that I've been wanting, is because I definitely want to have the chance to have a kid first before I further in my modification.
Sure. Not that I think transcrotals will sterilize a person,
but there's
better
always,
safe than sorry, for sure.
Yeah, you always run a risk.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've got... Like I said, you've got some of the biggest chest implants ever. You know, I mean, just monstrous beads up and down your chest. How big are those actually?
What they are actually is domes,
mm-hmm.
and they were custom. Sorry about this. Custom shape for me. They're 1 inch at the base with a 5/8 height, and I'd say they're probably the cone part might be somewhere around 5/8 to 3/4 inch across.
Mm-hmm. For comparison for people, that's you know, that's significantly better, bigger than say the Enigma's horns, significantly bigger.
Well, they're the Enigma's horns is 7/8 in height and about.
But they're not as wide as that.
No,
like,
they're not.
Like just like the volume and Enigma's horns are what generation, right?
They're six.
I mean, so he's got six generations of stretching. You put these things off, you know, like right away. I can't. What did the hour after the procedure feel like?
The hour after was catching my breath and basically trying to block out the whole procedure.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't too bad pain-wise. It was the next 2 or 3 hours afterwards that was a bit rougher. And then I had brought some painkillers of my own, and when I got on the train about 8 hours later, that's when they had worn off and everything had really caught up to me. And Steve had said it's going to feel like you've been hit with a hammer in the chest about 8 times, and that was the biggest understatement I'd ever heard. I mean, I felt like I'd had a jackhammer run over my chest because, I mean, in addition to the chest implants, I had had branding, ear cutting, large gauge piercing, and tattooing all done at within a 4-day period.
And of those, the implants were the worst?
They were the worst procedure-wise, but not procedure and sensation-wise. But I'd say the branding was the worst pain-wise.
Steve branded you as well?
Yeah, he branded my chin.
He branded your chin?
Yeah, and he also used the ESU on my ears also.
What did he do on your ears and on your chin?
My ears were 1¼ inches, and then in the right I had a 5/8 and an inch. What he did is he removed about a 0-gauge tunnel of flesh out of the right ear to make it 1½ inches and grooved up the left ear to make it equal to that.
Right.
And then on my face, we started to brand a 3-inch stripe from the bottom of my labret all the way down to the top of my throat, but I stopped about halfway through.
It was just too horrible, or?
It was too much to take, and I knew that I had a lot more to go.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we actually had other plans of scalpeling in a double 2-gauge navel piercing, which we both decided I wasn't able to handle it.
Not
and
in that
he
session,
wasn't comfortable
though.
With it.
Yeah. What was the motivation behind those chest implants?
Well, to begin with, I'd have to say it was just my chest felt really naked.
Mm-hmm.
And I just needed something to give shape, definition to it, and
something other than what tattoos could provide.
Exactly. And after I had chosen the design, that's when I started thinking about tattoos. I started thinking because I'd always wanted a full facial piece on my chest, and I started thinking, well, you know, these implants happen to tie right into that. So I altered my implant design a bit, curving the top bead out a bit. Work with a future
right.
shape of the face.
So these will very clearly integrate with the entire concept.
Exactly.
They're not just implants that are distinct from the rest of your mods.
No, they're the horns and the eye definition on the face.
Right.
And so it brings out the eyes and gives more of a sunken look to the center, much like the bridge on a person.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've also, we talked about some of your motivations earlier, but in the past you've also mentioned that you wanted, and I may be misquoting you to some extent, that you wanted sort of fame and recognition for your mods?
No, not at all, actually. That's one of the reasons I've kind of tried to stay out of the public's eye for the most part. I wanted people to notice where I was going and the accomplishments I was making, but I didn't want to be known for.
Given the choice, you'd rather be recognized for, say, being a great accountant.
Right, and, for the troubles I've had to go through and the lines that I've crossed, the barriers that I've overcome, pretty mm-hmm. much.
Now, you have talked in previous interviews about, I guess a... what easiest way to say it is what amounts to a pretty rough upbringing and definitely a troubled youth and all that. Do you think that had that been different, do you think you would have gone down this mod path?
Well, first to give my parents credit, it was most my own.
I'm not trying to slide your parents.
Yeah, but I just had to make that clear in my own respect, because a lot of people may not understand that. I purposely chose the hard road. My explanation the entire time was that you pick up more, you learn more, and you're more sure of yourself by the time you've gone through all these things. And if I had probably taken an easier path, I would have still had a love for modifications, whether to the extreme that I'm at now, that's debatable. I mean, I was always into piercings and tattoos at a very, very young age, including future wanting a lip disc, which mm-hmm. Ear stretching didn't come in then, but that was about the only real extreme thing. And I guess probably taking the hard path opened my eyes up to greater and further possibilities. And then plus, also during that time, I met a lot of people that have done things like that, specifically ear stretching and facial tattooing, and that's when I started deciding, well, these are just not even as extreme as I want to go, but these are going to be my first steps.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, as far as I've gone now, really doesn't even scratch the surface on where I want to go in the future.
Mm-hmm. And I guess in a lot of ways that was an unreasonable question. If you're saying that the hard road was your choice, then there really is no alternative as to how it could have turned out.
Exactly.
And that answers an awful lot of the questions about what body modification is, I guess, as well. Now, you may have a special insight that a lot of people don't have, because most of your, your publicly dramatic modifications have really been done over a very short time period, and maybe that gives you some more sort of before and after insights than someone who's done it slowly. How is life different for you now than it was 2 years ago?
No privacy. That's the big one. And it seems that I can't go through life quietly anymore. But at the same time, I can go through life unnoticed.
And, how do you mean?
People tend not to see what they can't handle. And in general, I think a lot of people tend not to see me.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, for those that have any interest or opposing to or anything along those lines, I scream out at them, but I don't have any of the negative reaction I ever thought I would.
Is that the biggest surprise?
Yeah, that's definitely the biggest surprise. And also another surprise is on how friendly people come across to me.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, on when I'm seen through just pictures and things, I've heard many times I look like an asshole. So it's nice.
Yeah, but people say that about everybody.
Well, true. But it's nice to see that I'm taken in so well. I mean, a lot of people really love to talk to me, and I think a lot of it is because I bend over backwards pretty much in dealing with abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And abuse not in the negative sense, but in the sense that when people see you like this, I've noticed this, they lose all manners whatsoever. And, I mean,
all restraint, it's true.
Yeah, yeah, they scream at you across the room. They have no qualms asking you what kind of genital modifications you have when you know, private, you know, that's a private thing.
You'd never think of asking an unmodified person that sort of question. You'd never, like, say, you know, say there's an obese person, you know, you'd never come up to them and, you know, feel their belly because it's sort of funny looking. And
exactly.
Whereas people will have no problem walking up to a guy with stretched ears and touching their ears without even asking.
Yeah, and that's another thing is personal space. People like to touch.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why that is, but, you know, a tattoo doesn't feel any different than regular skin, but they seem to think so. I always see people coming up, and they're asking about the tattoos, and at the same time, their fingers are coming forward to trace out the lines and things.
Now, facial tattoos are real rare. How often, if ever, have you ever run into someone with heavy facial tattoos on the street? Maybe never, I don't know.
Once, at least. My friend Brent, he's also on your
side. Yeah, but I mean someone that you don't know.
Someone that I don't know. Well, I've met a few cheek tattoos, a few forehead tattoos, but no real full facials.
Is there a camaraderie in that, or how do you feel when you see someone else that's sort of crossed that?
There's the automatic camaraderie of, you know, we're birds of a feather in a big general sense, but beyond that, there's a huge difference in what my facial tattoos are saying than what theirs are, or even the majority's are, I guess.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, like I said, I think we'll take another quick music break, and then hopefully when we come back, we'll talk to Francis for a while.
Okay.
All right, Jason. We'll talk to you once more again afterwards. But next it's Francis. So here's a musical break.
All right.
Ni le bien qu'on m'a fait, ni le mal, tout ça m'est bien égal. Non, rien de rien. Non, je ne regrette rien. C'est payé. Allumer le feu, mes chagrins, mes plaisirs, je n'ai plus besoin d'eux. Balayer les amours avec leur trémolo, balayer pour toujours, je repars à zéro. Non. Rien, ni le bien qu'on m'a fait, ni le mal, tout ça m'est bien égal. Non, rien de rien. Non, je ne regrette rien, car ma vie, car mes jours. Ça commence avec toi.
All right, we're back, and we are back with Francis now. Francis, thanks for talking to us as well.
Hi, Shannon.
Hi. Now, I guess you're a recent American immigrant now, and...
I'm not actually an immigrant yet.
Or a recent American... refugee, or whatever the right word is, and you've also very recently taken the step to becoming one of the facially tattooed.
Yes,
and up until someone told me that your facial stripe was a tattoo, I just assumed it was makeup. Is there supposed to be a subtlety to that tattoo?
There wasn't when I did it, but
it turned out great. But
well,
at least in pictures,
the first time I had it done, I absolutely hated it.
Mm-hmm.
It came out very badly on the first run. The ink didn't take at all. And I have very low self-esteem, and to have something that didn't come out right the first time on my face was absolutely...
Well, I was going to say, what thoughts go through your head when you take that huge plunge, get your face done, and then it is absolutely not what you wanted?
Oh, it was horrible. I mean, I spent a whole day in bed just crying and, just hating this thing that was on my face. But as it started to heal and I started to see what I could do with it from there, it had faded out towards the end of my nose, and I decided that I was going to work with that. It actually goes right down the front of my face, but it faded out, and I decided that I would work with that.
So you're not gonna redarken it?
I might do at some point, but to be honest, the pain of a septum tattoo is just brutal.
So the bottom of the septum is tattooed as well?
Yeah, it's all done.
And
for some reason, I don't know if it was the artist, or if it was the color of the ink, or if it was just my face, but the ink did not want to take at all.
And that was your first facial tattoo. There
was
nothing else before that. What, your hands weren't done or anything at that point, were they?
One of my hands is done, yeah.
And it was done before the facial tattoo?
Yeah, right before that. In fact, one of the reasons that I did that was to have a tattoo in a place that was visible all the time. It was almost a preparation for going into facial work.
Mm-hmm. And was it what when you're actually getting the facial tattoo? When you're sitting at the tattoo artist's and he's putting it in, what thoughts are running through your head?
I tried not to think about it. To be honest, I knew that something that I looked for was in getting it was permanent. That was something that I wanted, so I tried not to think too much about the ramifications that it was going to have. And my first facial tattoo, the artist had a really heavy hand with it too, so it was painful, and probably most of what was going through my head was just concentrating on writing it through.
Mm-hmm. And now that first one was a real simple design, but your next facial tattoo was, I guess, more along the lines of what Jason has.
Yeah.
Was the choice of tattoo partially motivated in sort of fitting in with that, or was it?
I don't think so. I'm just a big fan of colors, and I'm obsessed with bubbles. I would just have a full body bubbles if I could, but I just wanted something. Pink is my favorite color. I wanted something bright on my face. And the gray stripe, I wanted it gray, but once I had it on there, just on its own, I felt kind of colorless and a bit drab, so I wanted something a bit more upbeat on there.
Mm-hmm. And now you've seen how the world treats Jason with his facial tattoos. Do you think that you are treated differently as a woman with facial tattoos than he is as a man with facial tattoos?
Oh, most definitely. There's a big difference. A lot of people, I know the stripe looks like makeup to a lot of people anyway, but I even had someone at a convention say to me, well, we thought it must be makeup because you're a girl. And, a girl wouldn't tattoo their face, would they? And I get a lot of subtle sexism in that way.
Do you think that, it obviously is, but do you think that the tattoo industry is more sexist than the average industry?
I haven't experienced too much sexism in that industry. I choose my artists carefully, and the majority of them are friends, so...
Mm-hmm. And I guess you guys are in Florida, right?
Yeah.
Which hosts the all women's convention as well.
Yeah.
Now you'd said that bubbles were a big thing. Is that what the implants in your arm were about?
For the implants, I wanted some texture, and I wanted to do something more surgical, something moving away from just tattoos and piercings, and they just appeal to me in a way that is kind of hard to explain, I guess.
Is it, I think maybe tattooing is something that you've sort of one plays with as a child in drawing on oneself, but maybe implants are, implants assert a much more powerful control over your body.
Yeah.
Do you think that? Now, maybe you already know the answer. Maybe you don't. Is being facially tattooed and heavily modified going to affect your ability to enter the United States?
I'm hoping not. I'm hoping the fact that we both are is going to show the fact that it's not done for business purposes. It's going to show the fact that we're obviously, you know, a couple. They're mm-hmm. The majority of people look at us and they go, well, those guys are obviously together, you know, so I'm hoping it will work in our favor in that way.
Mm-hmm. And does America probably imagine it treats you roughly the same as a modified person as England did?
Actually, the part of England that I'm from is extremely bigoted towards this sort of thing. I have a lot easier time over here than I did there.
So it's a definitely nice change, I guess.
Oh, definitely. Back in England, it's much more of a violent reaction to this appearance. To give you an example, the town where I lived, there was maybe two bars where it was actually safe for me to go and have a drink. Otherwise, I would probably not get home in one piece.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about the way that that you and Jason met. You had never met in person. It's not like you bumped into each other at a tattoo convention. That's
yeah.
right. It was entirely an online experience.
Entirely, yeah.
How do you think that for people? I mean, heavily modified people are, you know, overall a geographically very spread out lot of people. Do you think that online will, you know, is very important in those relationships?
I think it's very important. Yeah, it's a good way to meet people that you probably wouldn't have a chance to in real life. And I doubt that I would have met someone like Jason unless I had online access.
Mm-hmm. And on top of that, you know, not just your partner, but when I look at photos of your wedding, I note a number of other, you know, sort of online regulars that I'm assuming were never met in person before that, potentially.
Yeah, that's right. Crow and his fiancée, Heidi, flew down from Texas to be at our wedding.
Mm-hmm.
They're good online friends of us, and we figured that it was a nice time to meet, and they wanted a holiday. And
did they also meet online, or?
No, I don't think
so. They were, I guess they're the real-life version.
Yeah.
Let's see. Now, you're going to be splitting your tongue as well.
Yeah.
And you will be doing the procedure on each other?
Yeah, we will be.
What made you decide to go that route rather than contacting, say, Steve, who's worked on both of you before?
We're both very much into doing things for ourselves if we can.
Mm-hmm.
If we feel comfortable and safe doing it, then we would much rather do it either on ourselves or on each other.
Will, now, when, you know, say Steve was doing it, it would be a very, you know, a very professional environment. Is there a, do you think that there's an added sort of intimacy building when you do a surgical procedure on your partner?
Definitely, absolutely. It is a bonding experience, and it is something that brings you closer to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Most definitely.
And, now, Jason is very much about the, it seems, like a trial by fire and a very, you know, sort of proving himself through going through a lot of these experiences. Do you feel that way as well, or do you think you've got a different set of motivations?
I guess my main motivation is just the fact that I have never, ever felt comfortable with myself the way that I was born, and I've been messing around with this kind of thing for almost, well, over 11 years now, and I'm looking for a state of comfort that I don't have otherwise.
Well, let me ask you what may be a difficult question then. Are the modifications a coping mechanism or a healing mechanism, or are they perhaps a pointer at a problem that would be better solved in other ways?
Well, I've asked myself this many times.
I'm sure.
Growing up without anyone in this sense like me, I've asked myself so many times if I was just insane or, you know, doing something.
And I think a lot of modified people ask themselves that question.
Yeah, I think they do, most definitely. But I've come to the conclusion that it's I'm just doing what comes naturally to me. I don't feel comfortable not doing it. So I don't think it's a harmful thing in any way. I don't believe that it's particularly a coping mechanism so much as a way of just finding some kind of peace.
So no matter what the reasons are, it's making you happy, and certainly no one has a right to tell you that it's not the right thing to do, I guess. All right. Well, we're going to take another music break, and when we get back, we will finish up with Jason. Francis, thanks a lot for talking to us.
His own kind. He's ready to take those fantasies and make them into something real. He'll finally do all the things he's been dreaming of. He's joining the cocksucker club to not have to pretend he was drunk when he seduced his roommate on his bunk. He might be bi, he might be gay, but he knows he's finally ready to say some of the things he's constantly thinking of joining the cocksucker club. So lick, 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 suck, 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 unroll the condoms and fuck, fuck, fuck. Down on your knees, give him good head, do it in your parents' queen-size bed. In high school he spent hundreds of hours fantasizing about boys in the showers. Billy was hung, Rick was thick, and Daniel had a most upstanding dick. But Eric was the one with extra yardage to love joining the cocksucker club. So lick, 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 slurp, 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 do it for your jaws start to hurt. The taste and feel of a dick that's new is a fun activity to pursue. He's thought about it for a long, long time, about being a to his own kind. He's finally facing what it means when another boy causes a lump in your jeans. Taking the plunge, going down for love. He's joining the cocksucker club. He's ready for the cocksucker club. He's a member of the cocksucker club.
All right, we're back with Jason. Jason, let's finish up by talking about where your plans are heading you.
Well, modification wise, I'd say that both of us are probably getting more in touch with a lot of the possibly the cultural meaning. I mean, we really have no way of judging what.
How can there be a cultural meaning when you're sort of defining the culture as you go along? I mean, this is really, at least in the West, is very much a new thing.
Well, right, finding the cultural meaning of what it means to us in the Western society.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, hopefully, giving a little bit of light to what it could mean to other people. Kind of showing people to go with your heart and go with what feels right, whether you can explain it or not.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't want to suggest that you would have the egoism to suggest this, but you are riding the crest of a wave, and you are some of the first people, and certainly, you know, one of a very small handful of heavily modified couples, which means that, you know, no matter what, people will look to you for guidance to some extent. What do you hope, you know, you can teach people through your example? And I am sure that that is an ego statement that you would not make, but I'm sort of
right,
forcing it on you.
Well, I'd have to say that one thing that people can learn from us, that if they truly want it and they truly believe, it's not going to get in the way of their life.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to stop them from having this job or that job or this relationship. You know, it's going to make you feel better with yourself, that when you choose your partner or your career, whatever it is, they're going to be more comfortable knowing that you're comfortable with yourself and you're comfortable with your choices. And also, maybe I hope that people can learn to accept their own regrets, for one. I mean, we're people who have chosen things that we didn't know what we were doing, and even some things we don't even much appreciate to the fullest that we could have, but yet we've still learned something from that, and that's what matters.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to reword it, and you can tell me if I'm saying it right. When you wear who you are on the outside, there's no hiding from who you are, and the world has to either accept you or not accept you for who you are.
For the most part, and once the world's done that, then there's nothing that's going to get in your way.
Mm-hmm.
And even if the world has it, as long as you can do it, you'll get through. It'll just be a bit more difficult.
Speaking of the future, that sort of reminds me of a mod you've got coming up, I think, in January. Mm-hmm. Now, when you first said, "Oh, I'm getting my lip cut," I assumed that you meant the same thing that everyone else means when they say that. It means they're going to put in a 2-gauge librette. But you're talking about a full-width lip cutting.
Right. I've already got a 000 librette. And basically, me and Francis both will be working on different dimensions, but the same concept. Mine will probably be a bit over an inch and a half cut, because I'm looking for an inch and a half diameter and about 3/4 inch height, and Francis is looking for about an inch by half inch.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going with the Inuit Eskimo shape style of plug, and maybe even a little bit of the meaning that comes with that.
What is the meaning? I'm not sure what the meaning is.
Well, we're not sure either, but
oh.
but we know that it ties in along the lines of ready to marry.
Right.
More like coming into terms with your man or womanhood, things along those lines, and it would just be, in our opinion, one step beyond implants.
Okay. Well, I'm going to fire off like 3 questions for you, and then I think that we're probably just about out of time. Where do you want to be in 5 years?
In a steady job along the same lines that I'm going, and a hell of a lot more modified than I am now.
Where do you want to be in 10 years?
Well, settling down and maybe working out the family situation and coming to terms with who I am as an adult, let alone as a person.
Where do you want to be in 25 years?
Where no one can see me.
And what about in 50 years? I mean, where will the Sands be as, you know, as an old, old couple?
Probably by 50 years, I'd say we'd be resurfacing to show that we made it.
Mm-hmm.
Just to show that it was a long, hard road, but here we are, we made it. Well, what did everyone else learn?
Mm-hmm. All right, well, listen, Jason, thanks a lot for talking to me today. I'm sure this has been one of our most popular shows yet. Everyone who has admired your mods and had fun leaving you both positive and negative comments in the pageant, I hope they enjoyed this. Thanks a lot.
Well, it's 40 below and I don't give a fuck. Got a heater in my truck and I'm off to the rodeo. And it's Alabama left and Alabama right. Come on, you fucking let me get your right, step right. Get off stage, you goddamn kook, you know. Piss me off, you fucking jerk. Get on my nerves. Well, here comes Johnny with a specker in his hand. He's a one-ball man and he's off to the rodeo. And it's Alabama left and Alabama right. Come on, you fucking dummy, get your right, step right. Get off stage, goddamn goof, you know. Piss me off, you fucking jerk. Get on my nerves. And I don't give a fuck cause I'm off the rodeo. Alabama left and Alabama right. Come on, you fucking dummy, get your right, step right. Get off stage, goddamn kook, you know. You piss me off, fucking jerk. Get on my nerves. Well, here comes Johnny with his pecker in his hand. He's a one ball man and he's off the rodeo. Come on, you fucking dummy, get your red.
me off. Fucking jerk. Get on my nerves.